I'm disappointed when I see the message isn't from Alex after all, though. The number on the screen isn't even saved in my contacts. I rub at my eyes as I click on the blue text box, opening up the message. 1-564-987-3491. Stupid lying bitch. Why don't you just fucking kill yourself? Oh, that was stupid of me. There is one other person who texts me at this time in the morning. Not Jake. Jake wouldn't be so stupid. He'd never leave hard evidence of his hatred that could possibly be traced back to him. But for the past 6 weeks, someone has been sending these messages to me, making my phone chime more and more frequently. And I haven't said a word about them. I've ignored them, or tried my best to anyway, but they're becoming increasingly more hateful. Stupid. Lying. Bitch. Why don't you just fucking kill yourself? I cover my mouth, not blinking, staring at the screen, and for a long second, I think I might be about to burst into tears and let out a furious scream at the same time. The conflicting emotions feel like they're going to rip me in two. I was such a fucking fool. After the shooting, I allowed myself to forget. Raleigh was, and still is, gripped in a fog of grief. My fellow classmates have been walking around in a daze, trying to remember how to be carefree teenagers again, when there are still bullet holes in the plastered walls, and reminders of violence lurk down every corridor and hallway. People were too distracted to make life hard for me, and I became complacent, daring to lift my head and look around. I allowed myself to believe I was no longer a target for hatred and cruelty, and it was the stupidest fucking thing I could have done. And then I got the first text message. People don't forget. People don't move on. People aren't intrinsically good, no matter how badly I want them to be. High school is a battle royale, a fight for survival, and no one stays their hands for long. In order to make it through the experience unscathed, people will hurt and cut and bite and kick at anyone who appears weaker than them in order to get ahead. And to the students of Raleigh High, I am the easiest fucking target there is. I tuck my knees up under my chin, a wave of sadness rippling over me as I stare at the phone lying there on the mattress 2 feet away. Sadness, quickly morphing to anger. So many people died when Leon walked into Raleigh and opened fire. We were taught a hard, painful lesson. But it seems some people still haven't learned. People fight back. When you corner an injured animal, eventually it kicks and bites back even harder, and tragic things happen. I'm done ignoring these messages. I don't plan on participating in this vicious cycle of cruelty and short-sightedness. I just fucking won't. I'm done bowing my head and pretending I don't notice them staring, pretending I don't hear the awful, sickening things they whisper about me as I walk to class. I am done taking this. I'm not going to hide from it anymore or let them get away with it. I'm going to face whatever abuse is hurled at me head on, and I'm not going to back down. Because fuck them. Life itself is a fragile, tenuous thing. It can be taken away or snuffed out at any moment. If I have another 23,000 days left on Earth, or another 100, I'm not going to allow a small-minded, hateful group of idiots to make me scared for a single one of them. My hand is surprisingly steady as I pick up my phone. I'm relieved as I tap out a reply to the message. Relieved. God, how have I not realized before now? All of this time spent being afraid of my classmates at Raleigh. It's been exhausting. Living on the edge of panic, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, permanently existing in this maelstrom of fight or flight. It's been quietly grueling in a way that I haven't realized until this very moment. And now that I've made this decision, that I won't be an active participant in their abuse, it feels like I've severed the taut cord that's been dragging me underwater, trying to fucking drown me. I hit send, and then study the one-word reply I've sent, the buzzing in the back of my head fading to nothing but static. Me. Coward. It's appropriate. It says it all. That one word was all I needed to send. Somewhere in Raleigh, a student who goes to my high school is also studying my response, and it's shaking them to their core, because they know it's the truth. For some reason, whatever that might be, they're scared too. And with that one word, I have reached down their throats, closed my hand around their heart, and I've squeezed. Silver, out of your pit, kiddo. We've got company. Downstairs, the front door slams closed, echoing throughout the empty house. The sound of my father's voice floats up the stairs, quieter than the drill sergeant level holler he just blasted up at me. And I realize that he's laughing. Boots being kicked off, bags being dumped on the kitchen counter, cabinet doors slamming shut. From the racket, there are 8 people in the lower level of the house, and they're as clumsy and heavy-footed as a herd of elephants. Silver, if you're not down here in 5 minutes, I'm going to tell Alex about the time you shit yourself at Seattle Zoo. What? Oh, no. No fucking way. Alex isn't here. He can't be. It's too early. He's not supposed to pick me up for another... Wait, what time is it? I snatch Mickey up from the bedside table, gripped with horror when I see that it's nearly time to leave for school, and Alex probably is here. Fuck, fuck, fuck! My foot catches in the bedsheets, and I nearly eat dirt when I launch myself out of bed. The Seattle Zoo shit story is not a good one. If my father breathes one word of what happened that day, I'm going to fucking kill him. This is the problem with parents. They spend years cleaning up your vomit, teaching you how to use a bathroom, how not to shove peas, coins, marbles up your nose, dealing with you screaming and basically being a little bastard, and all the while, they're biding their time, waiting for the day to arrive when they can tell someone you deeply care about that when you were 7 years old, you sneezed so hard in front of the giraffe enclosure at Seattle Zoo that you soiled your underwear. In my bathroom, I throw water at my face, jam my toothbrush into my mouth, and try to tame my hair all at the same time. I bounce on the balls of my feet, willing myself to go faster, and I end up scraping my gum with the plastic head of the toothbrush. Hurts like a bitch, but there's no time for pain right now. I kick my way into some jeans, wriggle my way into a clean Billy Joel t-shirt, and fly out of my bedroom, taking the stairs 3 at a time. Dad! Dad! I swear to God! I screech to a halt in the doorway of the kitchen, astonished by what I'm seeing. Dad's leaning against the counter by the sink with his arms folded across his chest, looking a little bemused as Alex crouches down next to the kitchen island, scratching Nipper's belly. The dog's mouth is open, his tongue lolling all over the place as my boyfriend rubs his fingers into his wispy fur. It looks like the damn dog is smiling. Huh, well that's just typical. Alex looks up, the vine tattoo wrapped around the base of his throat clearly displayed above the collar of his plain black V-neck t-shirt, and he winks at me. Morning, Dolcezza. His voice is so deep, it resonates around the kitchen, reflecting off the tiled floor so that I feel the rasp of it through the soles of my bare feet. His thick, wavy hair is in his face again, falling into his eyes. It's absolutely fucking criminal that he can make me feel so flustered, pinned to the spot, with nothing more than a second's eye contact. And in front of my father, no less. Perfect. I look up at Dad and nearly keel over from embarrassment when he arches a cool eyebrow at me. He knows me better than anyone. I'm sure he can tell what I'm feeling right now, and that thought is fucking mortifying.
Dolcezza? He asks lightly. My Italian's a little rusty. What does that mean?
Alex quickly lowers his head, hiding a smirk. He's pretending to be absorbed in petting Nipper, but I know the truth. I can only see the crown of his head and muscles pulling tight against the back of his t-shirt, but Alessandro Moretti's a little embarrassed too.
It's just a term of endearment, he tells my father.
Dad's bemusement deepens.
I have the Google Translate app on my phone, and I know how to use it, Moretti. If you're planning on using a foreign language to secretly seduce my daughter, think again. I will know.
Oh, fucking hell. Come on, really? I screw my eyes closed, groaning as I turn my face to rest my forehead against the door jamb. Dad, just... No, okay? No. Alex stands, shoving his hands into his pockets. He's the picture of composure as he faces my father and gravely says,
I wouldn't worry. Your daughter doesn't know a lick of Italian either. I couldn't seduce her with it if I tried.
I need to go back to bed. I need to go for a run. I need to get the hell out of this house. Basically, I need to be anywhere but here right now. This cannot be happening. There's no way my father and the guy I most definitely am having sex with are discussing my seduction.
Specifically, dolcezza means sweetness. Alex continues, smirking. You really don't have anything to worry about. Sweetness. Sweetness, Alex confirms.
He says the word lightly, like it's nothing. Like it's a saccharine way of showing the affection he feels for me. My father doesn't know that this is the word Alex growls while his head is between my legs and his tongue is working my clit. That it's the word Alex grinds out as he licks his fingers clean of me after he's just fucked me with them and made me come.
Sounds innocent enough, Dad announces brightly, shoving away from the sink.
I'm pretty sure I've turned crimson, my face is burning so fiercely.
English for the next 3 days, though. Probably a good idea, don't you think?
He slaps Alex on the shoulder, giving him his trademark, that's an order, not a request, tight-lipped smile. I'm too distracted by what my father just said to enjoy Alex's poorly veiled awkwardness. What do you mean, the next 3 days? Dad swipes his phone up from the counter, making his way toward his office.
Haven't you checked the Raleigh portal? You're off, he says absently. Too much snow. We're gonna be trapped here. I'm gonna work on the book, and you two, he says, eyes flitting from me to Alex and back again, are going to keep your hands to yourselves. I'm seriously too young to be a grandfather. I don't want to have to murder anyone either, Alex. My face is just too pretty for jail.
7. Alex. Ben, I don't like the thunder. Me. Don't worry, bud, it'll be over soon. Did you make the fort? Ben, yeah, but it's not very good. The ones you make are better. Me, I bet it's awesome. Why don't you take your flashlight in there and read one of the Spider-Man comics I got you? By the time you've finished, the storm will be over. Sitting on the couch at Silver's place, watching TV alone with her, is seriously fucking surreal. If I were Cam, I'd have left my ass to rot in that trailer and been glad of the fact that my daughter's loser boyfriend couldn't get to her for 3 whole days. But instead, I'm full of the Philly cheesesteak he prepared for dinner, and I'm curled up with Silver, wondering how the fuck I'm going to do the decent thing and not fuck the shit out of her the moment he goes to bed. I'm not used to all this trust. It's weird. It's making me feel weird. I've been mistrusted and disbelieved my entire life. If something ever went missing at a foster home, I was prime suspect number one. If there was ever the slightest reason for fireworks, it was always my fault, regardless of the fact that it actually wasn't my fault. Made things pretty simple, really. If people expected the worst, there was no real pressure to do better. Under Cameron Parisi's roof, however, I've been gifted with the highest of expectations, and it's fucking killing me. This is the first real opportunity I've had to not let someone down. Silver's father's a smart man, smarter than most. I'm sure he knows exactly what he's done, the sly bastard. Ben, I can't find my comics. I wish you were here. I tighten my grip on my phone, huffing under my breath. The beautiful girl sitting next to me brushes the tips of her fingers lightly against the back of my neck, humming softly. She must feel the stress radiating off me. Everything okay? She asks. This is the season finale. Don't you want to know who dies? Sorry, can't concentrate. Ben's freaking out. The snow hasn't hit Bellingham properly yet. It's raining like crazy over there. Thunder and lightning. Ben hates thunder, always has. Silver sighs softly, leaning her head against my shoulder. You're feeling bad that you can't get to him? I take a second to reply, trying to figure out what's troubling me the most. I'm angry at Jackie. Ben's a super sensitive kid, afraid of the dark, hates being trapped in small spaces. Thunder scares the shit out of him. She knows all of this, but she doesn't do anything about it. She makes him ride out shit like this on his own. She makes him take the elevator up to his therapy appointments every week, even though the doctor's office is only on the 3rd floor and it makes Ben cry every single fucking time. It's like she enjoys scaring him and... I work my jaw, attempting to come up with a way to express myself that doesn't involve murder. And it makes you want to kill her? Silver finishes for me. Yeah, it makes me want to fucking kill her. Silver's quiet for a while. A huge battle scene plays out on the television, too dark to really see which of the show's main characters are surviving and which of them are being cut down by the enemy. After a particularly brutal and bloody beheading, Silver whispers softly, "You'll be 18 in 5.5 months." "Yeah." "And then Ben will probably be able to come live with you, right?" She sounds hesitant, unsure, and my palms break out into a nervous sweat. I've been thinking about this a lot recently. Ben coming to live with me. I'll never leave him with Jackie. It's not an option. But it was just me before. I didn't have anyone else in my life to consider. Things are going to change if I'm the sole caretaker of an 11-year-old. I'll essentially be playing the role of a father to him, and that's bound to have an effect on my relationship with Silver. It's a lot to take on, dating a guy who has to look out for a child 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I fidget, repeatedly winding a loose thread from the seam of my jeans around the tip of my index finger, and then unraveling it again. I get it, you know. If it's too much, it's not exactly every teenager's dream come true being landed with a dependent. It's not cool, I rush out. If it's too much to deal with, me taking him on, then I understand. I'm not gonna hate you if you don't think you can hack it. Slowly, she turns away from the television, her posture stiff, her expression unreadable. Would you walk away if things were different for me? If something happened to my parents and I wanted to take care of Max? I don't even hesitate. I'd never walk away. I couldn't. No matter what was going on, I'd always be there for you. So what makes you think I'm any more capable of abandoning you, Alessandro Moretti? I've already been through hell and back, and you were the one who helped pull me out. I love Ben. He's the sweetest kid. Helping you take care of him won't be a burden, it'll be a pleasure. But that's beside the point. Whatever happens, no matter how difficult, I'm never going to bail on you just because things get hard. She smiles softly, placing a light kiss against my mouth. And I just sit there, rigid as a post. God damn it, Moretti, what the fuck is wrong with you? Get your shit together. I eventually remember to kiss her back, but I probably do a piss-poor job of it. My head's reeling, see? From what I've learned of people over the past 17 years, people do not stick around when the going gets tough. They disappear in a puff of smoke, so quick you can't see them for dust. My father left. The boys' home turfed me out at the first signs I might be a troubled kid. After that, it was a slew of foster families closing their doors on me and Ben, one after the other. Even my mother bailed on us. Yeah, she was sick, and looking back now, it had been a long time coming. But she made a decision when she put that gun in her mouth. She decided that ending her own life was preferable to hanging around and taking care of her sons. Only one person remained constant for more than a 6-month period after my mother died, and that was Gary Quincy. Horrifying, really, since Gary put a roof over my head for one reason and one reason alone, so he could fucking break me. And now, here's Silver, an impossible girl who shouldn't even exist. Too strong, too fierce, too beautiful, too perfect. And somehow against all sense of reason, logic, and justice, she's fucking mine. She just looked into my eyes and told me she'd stay by my side no matter what, and I damn well believed her. None of it. Fuck, none of it makes sense. Silver rests her head against my chest, snuggling into my side, and I'm overcome with a paralyzing sense of falling. A dizzying, unbalanced, nauseating sensation that has panic rising up the back of my throat in hot waves. This feels so good. Being here with her. It feels like life is finally taking a turn for the better, and that's fucking terrifying, because real life doesn't just do a 180 and suddenly everything just fucking works out. It just fucking doesn't. Something terrible always happens. Something brutal and soul-destroying, and all the good feels like it's being sucked right out of the world. I've been too bad to deserve anything this good. The universe has forgotten about the shit-kicking it decided was my birthright and appears to have gone on vacation. But it won't be long before it remembers what a worthless piece of shit I am and sets the natural order of things back in motion. In the meantime, I have no real choice. I'm going to choose to believe that Silver will stand by me when I get custody of Ben. I'm going to make sure I enjoy every single goddamn second I get to spend with her. I'm going to try not to think about it, to overanalyze every passing moment. I'm going to hope. And that, perhaps, is the most dangerous thing of all. The guest bedroom Cameron assigns to me is on the ground floor. There are two other guest rooms upstairs, but Silver's dad is obviously keen on putting as much space between me and his daughter as possible. I get it. It makes perfect sense, and I'm happy to play by his rules. Well, maybe not happy per se. Let's call it grudgingly willing. It's fucking torturous, though, knowing that Silver is in bed upstairs, less than 50 feet away, and I'm forbidden from falling asleep with her naked in my arms. That's the crux of it. The whole forbidden thing. Fruit's overrated, but the second someone makes it forbidden, I suddenly have a taste for that sweet sugar. The guest room's masculine, the walls painted slate gray with a deep maroon feature wall. The sheets on the king bed are gray to match the walls, patterned with a neat black pinstripe. Heavy brass instruments sit on top of the chest of drawers and are being used as bookends on the shelves. They look like they were designed for calibration and taking measurements. Architectural knickknacks, most likely. On the wall above the bed, a huge gilt frame mirror dominates the room, reflecting back the space, making it appear even larger than it already is. The Parisis aren't just well off, I realize, as I shrug out of my shirt, hanging it over the back of the leather armchair by the window. They're fucking rich. The well-heeled, quiet kind of rich that makes me think there's old money involved. New money speaks much louder than the understated luxury of Silver's place. It screams. There's nothing showy or over the top here. If it weren't for the sheer size of the place, the colonial columns, the ostentatious length of the driveway, and the solid quality of all the furniture, you'd easily think you were in a very normal middle-class American home. It's late. Almost 1 a.m, and Cameron's still in his office 2 rooms over, hammering away at his keyboard. I climb into bed, trying not to sigh out loud like a fucking loser when I feel the sheets against my bare skin. I have no idea what makes them so different to the sheets on the bed back at the trailer, but they're cool and crisp and make me shudder with pleasure. I've never been great about falling asleep quickly in new places. I'm ready to spend the next hour tossing and turning, my mind speeding at 120 miles an hour, worrying about Ben. But then, I'm out fucking cold. Alex? I stir, turning over onto my back. Alex? Skimming the surface of consciousness, thoughts begin to form in my sleep-clouded head. Alex, wake up, for fuck's sake, I'm freezing my ass off here. My eyes snap open, and for a suspended moment, I'm confused as fuck. Where the hell am I? And who the hell is grumbling at me in the dark? It takes a swift pinch to my side to jumpstart my brain, and I remember Cameron coming to get me at the trailer. Silver's standing beside the bed, framed in the moonlight that's pouring in through the window behind her. Arms and legs bare, she's wearing a silk camisole and tiny little red silk shorts. Nothing more than scraps of fabric that leave very little to the imagination. Her nipples are erect, peaked beneath the lacy detailing on the camisole, and my dick stirs, quicker to rouse than the rest of me. Her hair's loose, hanging down past her shoulders in thick waves. Her features are cast into shadow, but I can just about make out the shape of a frustrated smile as she prods my chest through the bedsheet. Move over, I'm gonna catch hypothermia in a second. My first thought is to throw back the covers, grab hold of her by her hips, and pull her down on top of me. I'm barely awake, and my body is craving her desperately. But I groan, scrubbing at my face with one hand. Silver, fuck. Your dad'll freak out if he knows you slept in here.
Who said anything about sleeping?
She whispers.
I'll be tucked up, back in my own bed in an hour. He'll never know.
Oh, come on. My dick's well past stirring now. I'm hard as fuck. All I can think about is driving myself deep into the back of Silver's throat. Argento, you're killing me. I'm trying to be the good guy here.
Oh,
She hums softly as if she's a little disappointed.
And here I was looking for the bad boy I fell in love with. I didn't realize he'd left in the night without saying goodbye.
Well, fuck me running. I shift in the bed, pulling myself up to lean my back against the mahogany headboard. My eyes have adjusted to the dark, and I can see even more of her now. She knew what she was doing when she came down here in those night clothes. The clingy fabric hugs the curve and swell of the underside of her tits, accentuating their shape and fullness, and I have to bite the inside of my cheek to stop myself from groaning out loud. Are you trying to provoke me, Argento? I rumble, because it's probably not a good idea. She turns her head, and the moonlight paints her features silver. She grins recklessly, arching an eyebrow.
Why not? Don't you want me?
That's not the point.
Because I want you. I was lying there in bed, and I couldn't stop thinking about you. I wanted your hands on my skin. I wanted my nipples in your mouth. I couldn't stop thinking about your cock between my legs, the tip pushing slowly inside me. I got so wet I couldn't take it anymore. I started touching myself. I couldn't stop. And then that wasn't enough. I had to come down here and have you touch me.
Fuck. Cruel. So fucking cruel. I've bitten the inside of my cheek so hard my mouth is flooded with the tang of copper. I'll never be able to fuck you again if your father castrates me, Argento. Is that what you want?
No, she says a little petulantly. But that isn't going to happen. I heard him snoring a minute ago. He sleeps like the dead, and we'll be quiet.
Silver. She cuts me off, silencing my next objection before I can even say it out loud. With sure, purposeful movements, she reaches up, taking the delicate thin straps of her camisole and sliding them over her shoulders. The entire garment slides down her torso. Moonlight bathes the porcelain perfection of her skin, bleaching it white. And it's all I can do not to launch myself out of the bed, snatch her up in my arms, pin her to the wall, and sink my raging hard-on inside her. Looks like all bets are off. My abysmal attempts at restraint have all been for nothing. You really shouldn't have done that, I growl. Silver tilts her head, lips parted, her eyes a little wild. Her hair falls over her shoulder, another curtain of silk, momentarily obscuring her left breast. Slowly, she reaches up, trailing her fingertips over the round swell of her flesh. Brushing the hair out of the way again, revealing her nipple, and it's almost too fucking much to bear.
Why?
She whispers.
Do you like my body, Alex? Are you hard? Do you like looking at me naked?
Fuck. I haven't been able to keep my hands off Silver since we started seeing each other, and she hasn't been able to keep hers off me either. But she's never been like this. So forward and demanding. Crystal clear about what she wants and determined to get it. It's turning me on so much, there really is no way I'll be able to rein myself in anymore. Run, I snarl, slowly sitting upright. If you don't want me to hold you down and fuck the shit out of you right now, I'd suggest you'd better run. My hands work of their own accord, taking hold of the sheets, pulling them back. And I see the shadow of hesitation in Silver's eyes. Is she second-guessing her actions now that she's got me on the hook? Maybe she can tell that she's about to get a little more than she bargained for. She swallows hard, but remains standing beside the bed.
I'm not going anywhere.
Brave, silly Argento. She came in here with a fire burning inside her, not realizing that her body was a tinderbox. She had no idea what kind of inferno she'd start when she slipped out of that camisole. She had no idea how quickly she was going to get swallowed in the blaze. The floorboards are cold beneath my feet as I get out of the bed and stand in front of her. She's as delicate and fragile as a china doll. Her features are so finely shaped and graceful that they contradict her true nature. It doesn't matter how strong she is now, though. Unless she tells me to stop, that she doesn't want me to touch her, then I'm going to devour her and to hell with the fucking consequences. Silver retreats a step, head craning back to look at me properly. The muscles in her throat work as she swallows again. Take those shorts off, now, I command. If you want to come in here and tease me, Silver, you better fucking commit. I'm only wearing a pair of sweatpants, no underwear, and my cock protrudes out in front of me like an iron staff, tenting the soft material. I'm not embarrassed by how turned on I am, far from it. When Silver's eyes dart down to the situation between my legs, I grab hold of my dick through the sweats, squeezing until I make myself curse. If you're not naked in 3 seconds, Argento, I can't be held accountable for what comes next. I'm being pulled down into the madness of my own lust, but beneath it all, I'm still thinking perfectly clearly. The moment I see hesitation flickering in her eyes, the moment I sense her heart skip a beat out of anxiety and not desire, then this all stops. I would never hurt her. I'd never ask her to do something she didn't want to. I'd definitely never make her do something against her will, and Silver knows that. She proves that when she takes hold of her shorts by the waistband and slowly pushes them down over her hips and then her thighs. I watch fascinated as she steps out of the puddle of red silk at her feet, my heart rate ramping up, the muscle kicking like an angry mule against the inside of my ribcage. She's more than I could have ever dreamed of. How could I have possibly dreamed of a girl like her, when even the beautiful things I've experienced in this lifetime have all been ugly in comparison? My palms are burning, itching for me to reach and touch her, but I'm not ready yet. I want to take her in some more. I need to savor her. Taking a step forward, I'm pleased and hard and aching all over when she mirrors my action, stepping back, away from me. I gave her a chance to run and that time has passed. Silver knows this well enough, but it still looks like she's planning on dancing with me a little all the same. Another step forward, and Silver skates back, her bare ass nearly hitting the wall behind her. Her gaze flickers toward the bedroom door, and I relent a little, angling myself instinctively, making it clear to her that she can get to the exit if she decides she wants to bolt. Her nostrils flare as she looks back at me. Her back straightens, shoulders pulling away from her ears, and she shakes her head. I don't want you to do that, she says. Don't give me an out. If I want one, I'll ask for it. I pause, hovering a foot away from her, pulling in slow, long, deep breaths in an attempt to calm the roaring in my head. You're in control of your fear? My voice is muted in the heavy quiet of the room. Silver looks up at me, her jaw jutting out in defiance. Yes, I can handle anything you throw at me. She is so, so wrong. God, I've never met anyone so fucking wrong before in my entire life. I'm hardly going to give her a demonstration to prove that point, but still, wrong. Reaching out for her, I take a lock of her hair and twist it slowly around my fingers. You don't know what you're talking about. You think I don't know myself? I'll prove it to you. Her tone is steady, confidence pouring off her strong enough that I'm almost convinced by her statement. Kiss me, she commands. Kiss her. I smirk, my cock pulsing painfully in beneath my sweats, begging to be unleashed. If she thinks me kissing her is going to prove anything, then she's got another thing coming. I don't think she's thought this through properly. But still, I'm hardly going to deny her a fucking kiss. Prowling forward one last step, Silver tenses up when she realizes she's run out of space and there's nowhere for her to retreat to now. Her hands remain slack by her sides as I bend over slightly, lowering my mouth to hers. The kiss is like a searing brand, hot and dizzying. Her lips are so soft and pliable. The moment I make contact with her, my imagination riots over what could be done with such a soft, sweet, fuckable mouth. I've had my hands in Silver's hair, guiding her head down as she takes my cock as deep as she can, but I've never made her gag on it before. I've never asked her to go beyond her capabilities. I've never asked her to give up oxygen in order to take another inch of me. A slideshow of deviant, filthy images present themselves to me as I slip my tongue inside her mouth. Things I would never dream of really doing with her, because of everything she went through with Jacob, Killian, and Sam on that bathroom floor. It isn't just that, though. She's good. She's sweet. She doesn't need to be warped by my every vile perversion. She whimpers as I kiss her deeper, burying my hands into her hair, crushing my body up against her chest. Squirming, she seems to want to get even closer. Her breath is frantic as she takes hold of me by the wrist and guides my hand from her hair down. I think she's encouraging me to touch her breasts, but she halts my hand by her neck, guiding me to the column of her pale throat. I suddenly realize what she wants from me, and a surge of need fires around my body like a bullet exploding from a gun. She wants me to choke her. My fingers tighten reflexively around her throat, just for a second. A deep chasm of satisfaction yawning open in my chest. But then I'm ripping my hand away, clenching it into a painful fist. No. No fucking way, I'm not doing that. I pant. Silver grabs my hand, holding it to her throat again.
You are. I want you to.
This time I move my whole body away from her, not trusting myself to stick to my decision. No fucking way. We aren't getting caught up in that kind of power play bullshit, Silver. Trust me, you don't want it. A stunned look of confusion passes over her face.
Trust me. I do.
Silver, haven't you done it before?
Of course I've done it before. Aren't you into stuff? Doesn't it turn you on?
It doesn't matter if it turns me on. It's not right. Not for us, anyway. The confusion on her face disappears in a heartbeat, swiftly replaced by hurt.
So, you've fucked other girls before and been rough with them. You've liked it, it's turned you on, but you won't do it with me because, what, I'm too broken?
No, Silver, you're not fucking broken. I know that more than anyone.
Then what? Why won't you do it, even if I'm asking you to?
Fuck. I hate the way she's looking at me. Like I swore I could give something to her, something that's important to her, and now I'm going back on my word. Sighing heavily, I return to her, taking her face in my hands, and I kiss her again. Relief floods through me when the stiffness in her muscles eases and she relaxes against me. I didn't want to disappoint her. I don't want to let her down. I also don't want to do something she thinks she's ready for, only to scare the shit out of her and send her spiraling headfirst into some kind of dark fucking PTSD nightmare that she never reemerges from either. My logic must be kind of obvious, must make some kind of sense to her. Because Silver pulls away, resting her forehead against my chest, and says,
I'm not stupid, Alex. I don't need handling with kid gloves. I know what I want.
I smooth my hand over her hair, resting my chin on the top of her head. This is fucking brutal. My blood is molten lava in my veins. My erection is now so hard and painful that I want to pick her up and take her right here where we stand. Okay. Then why do you want that? I ask. I have to know. If she can't give me a reasonable answer, then there's no fucking way I'll ever consider doing something like that with her. At first I think I've got her stumped. She doesn't say anything for a long time. But then her even voice breaks the silence.
I don't want to feel breakable. I want to feel like I'm in control of my own body. It excites me to think of handing myself over to you, knowing that you could do absolutely anything to me, because I trust you, and I know you'll never hurt me. But the risk of it excites me, Alex. Is that what you need to hear to be okay with it?
Don't tell me anything because you think I need to hear it. She takes my hand again, but this time she doesn't try and wrap it around her throat. She firmly thrusts it between our bodies, down in between her legs. I react the same way any hot-blooded male would react. I stroke my fingers through the folds of her pussy, finding her clit, and her point is instantly proven. She's not just wet. The insides of her thighs are slick with her need. Fuck, I hiss between my teeth. Holy shit, Silver. I was thinking about you on top of me when I was touching myself upstairs. I was thinking about you holding me down. I was thinking about your hand around my neck, cutting off my air supply while you fucked me so hard I saw stars. And now you won't give it to me. If I had to complete a sobriety test, I'd fucking fail. I'm drunk on Silver, wasted on her. The way she's talking, the way she's pulling my strings, the things she's asking of me. I hate that it's all affecting me so badly, but I can't fucking deny any of it. I want to dominate her. I want to own her body. I want to possess her in a way that feels new and a little frightening even to me, for fuck's sake. And if I start, Jesus, forgive me, there won't be any stopping.
Alex, I need it, she whispers. Please.
I have limits. There are lines even I won't cross, but when Silver begs me for something with this kind of despair in her voice, I can't fucking say no to her. When she shoves her hand down the front of my sweats and grabs hold of my dick, whimpering as she closes her fingers around me, I know I'm going to give in to her. I shouldn't fucking do it. It's so fucking dangerous, and it could jeopardize everything we have. But I'm fucking lost to her. I rub my thumb over her lip, snarling like a savage dog as I push it into her mouth, past her teeth, and I press her tongue down, feeling her shake against me. Say the word, Silver. Say the word when you've had enough, because I don't think I'll know when to stop. My hand is around her throat a second later. The base of her skull is flush against the bedroom wall, and my fingers are driving into her pussy, thrusting up inside her. Her eyes are wide as I tighten my hold around her neck, and she lets out a strained, desperate moan as I lean my weight against her, making it hard for her to breathe. My dick's so hard and so fucking swollen that it feels like it's going to explode as she pumps her hand up and down my shaft. She isn't holding back. She's jerking me off so hard that it actually hurts, but the pain only urges me on, making me react in kind, fucking her with my fingers until her back is bowed and her eyes are tightly shut, her face turning a worrying shade of crimson, visible even in the dark of the room.
I want you, Alex. Fuck, please. I need you inside me right now. I can't take it. I need to come.
It's a relief that she can actually still speak. It's a relief that I'll be able to hear her if she tells me to quit. My heart's racing as I pick her up, bodily lifting her from the floor, my fingers gouging into her skin as I carry her over to the bed and I throw her down on the mattress. My sweats are down my legs and gone in an instant. She claws at my back in a frenzy and I snap out a rough, tight string of curse words as I shove her legs open and fall on top of her. There's no hesitation, no moment of caution while I check to see if she's okay. God help me, I push myself inside her so forcefully that her whole body tenses, locking up, her back curving away from the bed.
Alex, fuck, Alex, oh my God.
I draw back and then slam myself into her, my synapses firing, every part of me out of control. But no, there it is. I feel it. One tiny, tenuous strand of restraint pulled taut in the back of my head, warning me not to go too far. So long as that single strand exists, I know I'll be able to keep myself in check. We're balancing on a knife's edge, though. I don't want to mark her. I don't want to bruise her. But then Silver's hand is winding its way into my hair, pulling hard, and she's issuing an order through her bared teeth.
Bite me, Alex. Fuck, bite me. I want your teeth on me. Make me scream. I do it. I bite down on the tender skin of her shoulder, close to her collarbone, and Silver lets out a breathless, wordless scream that catches me off guard. I clamp my hand over her mouth, grinding my teeth together as I growl into her skin, knowing it's already too late. Too late for everything. Her father probably hurt her. Too close to coming at a stop, and so is she. We cling to each other, hands digging into each other's flesh, both of us possessed, wrapped, maddened by the sensation of our bodies moving against one another in time, seconds away from diving headfirst into a black, dizzying descent. The shockwave hits me like a hammer to the back of my head. It's pleasure, but not like any other kind of pleasure I've experienced before. This is almost panicked, chaotic pleasure, cutting the tendons in the backs of my legs and my arms, rendering me useless as I thrust into her one final time. Silver's thighs tighten around my waist, squeezing hard enough to make me see fucking stars. Her head thrown back, her face a rictus of oblivion. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. She chants the words over and over, her cheeks flushed with blood, crimson from the exertion and the savagery with which we took one another. I hold on to her, muttering sweet things into her damp hair, a sated weight lying heavy in the center of my chest, knowing full well that this is what it must feel like to lose your mind. Our breathing eventually slows, and when I pull back, looking down at Silver, she looks up at me with dazed eyes, pupils swallowing her irises, contentment etched into the features of her face. It's only when I allow myself to look down, and I see the smear of dark red against the paleness of her skin, that I understand what I just did. I bit her so hard that I drew blood. Fuck. I shove myself up, reeling away from the evidence of my own stupidity. God, I'm sorry, Argento. I didn't mean to... She frowns, looking down at herself, straining to see why I'm so horrified. She touches her fingers to her shoulder, her brows knotting together when they come away red. Oh. If the pleasure I felt a moment ago when I was still inside her was great, then the guilt that follows is inconceivable. I can't wrap my head around it. Where's your first aid kit? Let me find something to... Quickly, Silver sits up, places her hands against my bare chest. No, Alex, stop. Don't freak out. It's okay. It's okay. No, it's... I stop myself, trapping the words behind my teeth. Shouting's the worst possible thing I can do right now. It'll only make things worse. Taking a deep breath and then another, I sit back onto my heels, covering my face with one hand. It's not okay, I force out. I shouldn't have done that. Her hands brush over my shoulders, soothing, placating circles that should make me feel better but don't. Alex, please, don't do that. Really, I'm fine. I asked you to do it. I told you to. It turned me on, for fuck's sake. I just wanted you so badly, I needed it to hurt. I needed it to hurt. Christ. I let her pull my hand away from my face, even though I'm still stumbling over the fact that I made her fucking bleed. Alex, look at me, okay? I love you. It's what I wanted. You're being silly. It's a tiny little graze. There's barely even a mark. Now, please... Will you just hold me? I want to lie on your chest for a second before I have to go back upstairs. I do look at her. I look deep into her eyes, trying to find some sort of hurt or disturbance there. But there's nothing. She seems totally normal. The knot of distress that cinched tight around my heart loosens a little, but it doesn't disappear altogether. I'm vibrating, full of nervous energy as I lie back down on the bed beside her, and she wriggles her way into my side, resting her head over my heart. My erratic pulse doesn't slow until I feel her fall slack against me, and she passes out.
I wait until I'm sure she's well and truly out for the count before I carefully pick her up from the bed and carry her up the stairs to her own room.
8. Silver. The wind howls and moans all day Saturday, rattling at the windows, and great curtains of snow sweep across the Walker Forest, shrouding the Sitka, larch, and the mountain hemlock in shawls of white. Dad manages to speak to Mom and Max in the morning, making sure they're safe, and when the power goes out again around 3 in the afternoon, he descends into the basement to turn on the new generator he purchased from Home Depot with a gravely smug look on his face. If my father heard any of the noise I made last night when I paid a visit to Alex's room, then he doesn't say anything about it. Honestly, I doubt he knows I snuck out of my room and tiptoed down the hallway, past his room, and down the stairs. When Casey and I were still thick as thieves, I used to sneak out of the house every other night, and I never got caught once. I know precisely where every creaky floorboard is in this house. I also know just how deep my father sleeps. Alex spends an inordinate amount of time doing push-ups and sit-ups without his shirt on. I sit and peer at him over the top of the book I'm pretending to read, enjoying the view, but also slightly worried. He's tense, agitated, pulled taut as a bowstring, ready to snap any second. And I know why. I pushed him into doing something he was uncomfortable with, and now he just can't seem to make peace with himself. He paces in front of the bay window in the living room with his hands on his hips, huffing and blowing like a horse that's been ridden too hard. It's painfully clear that he wants out of the house. He's trapped, and it hurts like hell that he wants to get away so badly. I do understand, though. I barely recognized myself last night. I have no idea what possessed me to ask him to be so rough with me. I'd been laying there in bed, every single messed up text I've received over the past few weeks repeating themselves in my mind, and I'd wanted to feel like I was in control for just one second. I knew what I needed to make myself feel better, and I was right. It made me feel electric, alive, and I don't regret it for a second, even if I did wake up with a very obvious bite mark just below my collarbone. I'm not planning on showing it off, of course. The round neck sweater I pulled out of the back of my closet hides it well enough without looking too obvious. Alex isn't stupid, though. He took one look at me in the sweater when he stumbled into this kitchen earlier, hair all over the place, and a deeply unhappy scowl darkened his handsome face. Things are slightly better on Sunday. The storm subsides, and the sun even makes an appearance. I spend the afternoon sporadically checking on the Raleigh High portal, waiting to see the dreaded blue box at the top of the screen, announcing that school will be back in session tomorrow. It's nearly dusk by the time the site's updated, and the box appears, confirming that life will be continuing on as normal in the morning. When I see it, I'm struck by a nauseating wave of nerves. I haven't received another text message since the one that came in on Friday morning, but walking through the doors of Raleigh High is still going to be stressful. I'm going to be walking down through the halls, staring into the other students' faces, wondering which one of them told me to fucking kill myself. I still haven't told Alex about that, or any of the other messages. I am going to. I know it isn't smart to keep something like this from him, but I just need a moment. He's going to flip the fuck out when I show him the texts, and I want to pretend for just one more day that things can be normal for us. Sunday night, I pluck up enough courage to creep into the guest room again, but this time, I don't strip naked and demand to be choked. Alex is asleep. He doesn't even stir when I lift back the covers and climb into the bed next to him. He only wakes up when I slide my hand over his chest, fitting myself into his side. His face is in profile, all shadows and highlights. When he turns to look at me, I see that the storm he's been weathering has broken too.
Dolcezza, he whispers. Sei la mia vita.
The sheets rustle as he raises his hand and uses the tip of his index finger to stroke a line down the bridge of my nose and over my lips. I lean into him, and he places a gentle, soft kiss on my mouth, achingly sweet. But that snap of fire still exists between us, ready and waiting to ignite and burn the whole world to the ground at a moment's notice.
What did that mean? I whisper when he pulls back.
Alex dons a small, crooked smile.
It means
that I'd do anything for you. It means that I'm weak for you. My heart is either swelling or breaking. I can't tell which. I'm not the only one who's had a difficult past. Alex has had more than his fair share of unhappiness and hardship to contend with, and the experiences he had to endure have made him unbelievably strong. Being strong has kept him alive, kept him in one piece. So to hear him tell me that I've made him weak? Well, I really don't know how to feel about that. Text message received. 1-564-987-3491. Bitch, you think you're better than us? You're worthless. Keep your head down, or you're gonna die screaming. 9. Silver. The struggle for power in high school could be compared to the political strife of many South American countries. For years, a dictatorship state exists. The lower classes are ruled over by one singular tyrannical oppressor, hell-bent on keeping the people in their places. The next second, the people have risen up, overthrown the despot, and everything is in complete chaos. Different factions vie for supremacy, opposing parties battling to rise above the others. Anarchy reigns supreme. The people are finally free, but suddenly there are no rules and no consequences for poorly thought out actions. The people begin to whisper behind their hands that maybe things were better under the tyrant after all. At least then they knew which way was up. Without Casey stalking the halls, striking fear into the hearts of her fellow students, Raleigh High is basically upside down. All of the different cliques are trying to fill the power vacuum, and it looks as though things are going to get ugly soon. When Alex and I arrive on Monday morning, a huge crowd has gathered in the waterlogged parking lot, and it looks like World War III is breaking out. I'm still jittery from the shitty text I received this morning, the one that I barely managed to hide from Alex as he handed me my phone, and so my nerves are already jangling when a high-pitched scream cuts above the shouting and jeering. "What the fuck?" Alex hisses under his breath. He won the rock-paper-scissors contest we held to see who would drive, so he kills the Nova's engine and hands over the keys to me, getting out of the car to see what the hell is going on. A lot of the snow that fell in the storm has already melted, and I have to hop from one patch of concrete to another to avoid stepping into any ankle-deep, ice-cold puddles as I follow behind Alex. Even though he's wearing his white Stan Smiths, Alex doesn't seem to notice the fact that he's wading through 4 inches of water.
"Dirty fucking slut! I'm gonna knock your fucking teeth out!"
A cheer goes up from the crowd of gathered students. They're forming a ring, 4 people deep, around what sounds like a raging catfight. One of the guys from the football team, Bronson Wright, whips around wearing an angry sneer on his face when Alex tries to push through the crowd. The second Bronson sees who jostled him, he backs down, the whites of his eyes showing.
"Sorry, man. I thought..."
Bronson doesn't finish. He just moves out of the way so Alex can get by. It's been like this ever since school started up again after the shooting. In every way that counted, Alex used to be an outcast like me. People were intrigued by him. They were intimidated by him. But even with Zen's relentless pursuit of him, they didn't accept him. Now, things have changed. People still look at him with suspicion and fear, but their expressions are also tinged with begrudging respect. Alex Moretti took on Leon Wickman and got shot for his troubles. Alex Moretti nearly died taking down a murderer. Alex Moretti is now a demigod to our fellow classmates, a demigod they both love and hate in equal measure. Bronson falls into the "we hate Moretti" camp since he's on the football team, but he's also not stupid. He knows he'll get his ass kicked if he starts any trouble. Alex takes my hand, guiding me along beside him through the crowd. Bronson glares down at me as I shuffle past him, piercing me through with daggers sharp enough to cut. Obviously, just because I'm with Alex doesn't mean anything to him. I'm still the girl who caused trouble for the king of Raleigh High. 3 guys from the football team might have died when Leon walked into school and opened fire, Sam Hawthorne amongst them, but Jacob Weaving is sadly still alive and kicking, and he hasn't changed one bit. He still wants to punish me for humiliating him as he raped me. And that means that his dumbass cronies are all still charged with the task of making my life as miserable as possible. I wonder what they'd say if they knew how terrified their glorious leader was in that music booth. Will they still follow him so blindly if they knew what a cowardly piece of shit he is? Normally, I'd duck my head and avoid Bronson's spiteful glare, but not today. I made myself a promise, and I intend on keeping it. I'm not going to be cowed by these assholes anymore. I won't be intimidated or beaten down by them. Drawing in a deep breath, I beam up at Bronson, treating him to a dazzling smile that contains the barest hint of condescension. He's not expecting this, obviously. His scowl disappears, shock and surprise widening his eyes instead. "Lying little bitch," he hisses after me. I might have pretended not to hear him in the past, but this morning I cast a look back over my shoulder, arching a bored eyebrow at him. And the gesture has the desired effect. It looks like he has steam coming out of his ears, he's so angry.
"Arg! Get the fuck off me!"
Alex breaks through the crowd, and there, in the middle of the circle of bodies, is Zen, doubled over, caught in a headlock by Rosa Jimenez. When Casey was around, Rosa was second-tier Raleigh royalty. She's been dating Laughlin Woods for the past 3 years, but during that time, Zen must have made well over 50 plays for her boyfriend. Zen always found it entertaining to flirt with him, constantly trying to fuck him, even though she knew it would hurt Rosa, because it didn't matter back then. She was untouchable, one of Casey Winter's coveted sirens. So long as she had Casey watching her back, then Zen got away with murder. With Casey nearly 100 miles away in Seattle now, however, it looks like Zen's discovering what payback feels like, and she's not enjoying it all that much. Rosa locks her arm around Zen's throat, jerking her down to her knees, and the girl screams as the dirty parking lot snow drenches her jeans.
"Come on, cunt, what are you gonna do? What are you gonna do?" Rosa snarls.
The crowd hollers, some of them chanting for Zen to get up, but most of them are siding with Rosa.
"Fuck her up! Hurt her, Rosa! Kill the bitch!"
I watch horrified as Rosa pulls a glinting piece of silver from her back pocket, and suddenly she has a cruel-looking serrated hunting knife in her hand.
"Shit!"
The kid standing next to me, a nerdy type from computer club, catches sight of the weapon and turns, bolting toward the school building. Half of the other spectators do the same, backing away from the scene with their hands in the air and fear in their eyes. The other half are frozen, their feet rooted into the ground, unblinking. Alex's hand tightens around mine. I can already see him jumping into this melee, putting himself in another dangerous situation that might cost him his life, and horror blooms like an ugly flower in my chest. Not this time, Moretti. Not going to happen. I close my other hand around the top of his arm, digging my fingers into the leather of his jacket. He immediately looks back at me, tension in the lines of his face, and I shake my head.
"Don't. God, please don't. Not this time."
Rosa holds the knife in front of Zen's face, showing her the wicked blade.
"How you gonna fuck with other people's guys with your face all cut up, bitch?" Rosa spits. "You still think it's funny, huh? Still think it's your God-given right to try and take what doesn't belong to you?"
I loved Zen once. She was one of only 4 other people in the entire world who really, truly knew who I was. I would have done anything to protect her. A little over a year ago, I would have charged at Rosa myself, desperate to get her the hell away from my friend. But now a cold and indifferent shield goes up around my heart. This is really fucking bad, but there is such a thing as justice. There has to be, and too many people have gotten away with far too much at Raleigh High. Maybe it's time that people started paying for their sins. Zen screams, a high-pitched, reedy, pathetic sound, and my stone-cold resolve falters. Rosa grimaces, jabbing at Zen's face with the knife, and I see the determination in her eyes. She's not just here to scare Zen this morning. She's here to hurt her. Witnessing the intent on Rosa's face is seriously fucking disturbing. When did we become this? At what point did rape, murder, and assault become acceptable to the students of this school? Was there a defining moment that made one of us snap? Did the actions of that one person then make it okay for 3 other people to discard common decency and take whatever they wanted? Has this all been a domino effect of pain and suffering because of one small defining moment that might have seemed insignificant at the time, but is now responsible for 18 lives. Rosa slashes with the knife, but she doesn't follow through on her threat and cut Zen's face. She grabs a handful of Zen's hair instead, hacking and sawing at her wild, bouncy curls, and then letting clumps of it flutter away on the breeze.
No! No, 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 not my hair, please!
Zen sobs. Her hair has been a part of her identity for as long as I've known her. Zen's one of the vainest people I've ever come across. So this, hacking off her hair, it'll feel almost the same as scarring up her face to Zen. At least this isn't permanent.
What in God's name is going on here?
Principal Darhauer's roar of anger splits the air in two, deafening even over the shouting of the crowd. He charges into the knot of people, his navy blue tie flapping in the wind over his shoulder. His suit pants are soaked well past the ankle. Rosa looks up at him, hesitating for a second, but she doesn't let go of Zen or the knife.
Ms. Jimenez, what the fuck are you doing?
I've never heard Darhauer curse, not even after the shooting. His face is so purple, he looks like his head is about to burst open from all the pressure building up inside of it.
Haven't we had enough of this to last a lifetime? He demands. What the hell are you trying to accomplish here? What do you think is going to happen now?
I don't know, Rosa admits. I don't really care what comes next. This little slut just needed to pay.
Drop the knife, Rosa, Darhauer grinds out.
His hands are on his hips, his head bowed, shoulders heaving.
I swear to you now, if you drop the knife, we'll work together to figure this out. If you don't, the situation will be beyond my influence.
Zen whimpers, tears coursing down her cheek. Our eyes meet for a split second, and for the first time in over a year, I'm not met with disgust and contempt. I'm met only with fear.
What do you mean? Rosa demands. Beyond your influence.
What do you think I mean? Sheriff Hainsworth's on his way. Ms. Gilchrist's calling your parents as we speak. If the sheriff pulls into this parking lot and finds you holding another girl at knife point, things are going to be very bad for you. Very bad.
Rosa swallows, turning the knife over in her hand. She stares the principal down, searching his face, perhaps looking for some sort of sign that he's lying. Her shoulders relax, her body loosening. And for a second, I think she's going to let Zen go. But then she rips Zen's head back, grabbing another giant handful of her hair, and she saws through it crazily, slashing out with the razor-sharp knife, cutting more and more of Zen's hair away.
Rosa!
Next to me, Alex shakes his head, eyes hard, jaw clenched.
Holy fuck, he mutters under his breath. It's like fucking Lord of the Flies up in here. I thought Raleigh was supposed to be one of the good schools.
Zen sobs as Rosa finishes up her insane task, throwing the last puff of Zen's hair right into her face. Her hair is shorn so close to her scalp in places that Rosa's blade must have nicked the skin. A thin trail of blood runs down the side of her head, following the curve of her skull, coursing around the back of her ear and down the side of her neck. In the distance, the high-pitched wail and throb of a police siren echoes over the trees that surround Raleigh High. Rosa Jimenez drops the knife. Alex has been fixed on the girls the entire time. He hasn't noticed the grim presence of Jacob Weaving, standing apart from the crowd, shooting knives at me, like he's plotting my very slow and painful death.
10. Alex. Monty. Couldn't get the bag. Bring it here by 4? I have news on the Weaving situation. It's a running joke that Mrs. Weber, our AP math teacher, is so short-sighted that she wouldn't be able to make out a bus before it hit her. The woman's near blindness works in my favor as I openly reply to Monty's text from my seat at the back of the classroom. Me. Sure. See you then. I ask no questions, I say nothing about the Weaving situation or the fact that he promised to help bring down the entire family. It's better if I don't even type their name in a message. According to Montgomery, everything's still going according to plan. As per Silver's request, whatever trick the old man has tucked up his sleeve is legal and won't cause any physical harm to Jacob, but I'm increasingly less and less enamored by the promise I made. I want to break the law. I want to hurt Jacob. I want to fucking kill him. Thankfully, Silver doesn't have any classes with the piece of shit. They might not have believed her when she went to Darhauer and told him what had happened, but they sure as hell made sure they weren't on the same class schedule afterward. At Mr. Weaving's request, I seem to remember hearing. He didn't want a lying, vindictive, spiteful little bitch anywhere near his son. Such a fucking joke. Jacob's ass should have been beaten black and blue and then thrown in fucking jail. Instead, Silver was treated like garbage, and she was moved from her classes as punishment for telling tales. How is any of that right? Bellingham was rough. The shit that went down there would have given most people nightmares. But even there, the administration ran things by the book. If someone was discovered to be bullying or harassing the other students, they were gone. And sexual assault claim? Fuck, the cops would have been there before you could even breathe the word rape. Raleigh likes to present a well-to-do facade to the outside world. A lot of rich motherfuckers send their kids here in light of the fact that the closest private school is all the way over in Seattle, and they want to keep their children close. The building itself is beautiful, and the facilities are all brand spanking new. But at its core, Raleigh is a rotten fucking apple. Take a bite and you won't struggle to come across something foul that will leave a bad taste in your mouth. This year, it's the Weaving family pulling the strings with their obnoxiously large donations to the football team and Mr. Weaving's unwelcome presence on the school board. But Jacob will be aging out of Raleigh in a year's time, and Mr. Weaving's interest in the school will graduate right along with his son. There isn't a shadow of a doubt in my mind that there'll be another meddling parent with deep pockets who'll happily step into the breach once Caleb Weaving's made his exit and taken his checkbook with him. It's just the way things go. Regardless of how it happened, I'm glad Silver didn't have to sit in a classroom with Jacob. I, on the other hand, am not that lucky. We're in history together, as well as Spanish, English, and graphic design. I find myself sitting next to the sick bastard at least once a day, and it takes everything in me not to pile-drive my fist into the sick fuck's face. 30 minutes after I reply to Monty's text, the bell rings and I make a fast escape. Silver's on the other side of the building, so chances that I'll see her between classes are slim, but for once she isn't the reason I'm bolting from math. There's someone I plan on paying a visit, and I don't want Silver knowing about it. I find Killian Dupree close to the boys' locker rooms, talking to the Neanderthal who thought about starting a fight with me this morning after knocking into him. Killian sees me charging down the hallway toward him, makes eye contact, and practically shits himself. Before the shooting, he might have tried to bail before I could reach him, but that's not quite as easy anymore, given that he's wheelchair-bound. He scrambles, trying to navigate his way around Bronson, but there are too many people bustling by, choking the corridor, and he isn't able to bully a path through the crowd. His buddy doesn't even give him a hand and get out of his way. My hackles are up when I